Robert, you still there?
Are we there? Good to go?
Yes, sir.
Did they kick you off because of that recording thing?
Yes, sir. You had to
All right.
Everybody has to hit one to acknowledge.
Uh-oh. Acknowledged. All right, we're good to go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Persuasion Call of the Week. We're talking another tool of persuasion. And last week somebody asked that we talk a little bit about stories, story selling, stories and persuasion, and is there a correlation between top persuaders and their ability to tell stories? And the answer is absolutely. It is a big part of persuasion, is understanding the power of stories, why they work, how to structure a good story. It just brings everybody into the picture. Because what you understand about stories is that stories persuade without detection. Did you catch? Stories persuade without detection. Because a couple things happens when you tell a story. Now, first of all, someone can be bored out of their mind if someone tells a story. A, it brings them back. And they kind of put themselves there visually as part of the story. And so when you can get the story to come alive, they're in the story. They're being persuaded themselves. They are persuading themselves. So it's a very powerful thing. Now, just with humor, there's a direct correlation between humor and persuasion that when you do use humor, people are either going to laugh with you or feel sorry for you, okay? Now, with stories, not quite that bad, but there are some bad storytellers out there. You've heard a joke before, you told somebody, or you laughed about it, and you try to tell somebody else, and it just dips. So that's the critical thing, is learning to do it the right way. Some people go way too long. Some people, the point isn't clear. It is something that will make a big difference in your ability to persuade. So first of all, grabs their attention. It persuades without detection, and it makes it more memorable, meaning they're going to remember your message a lot longer. They're going to remember you a lot longer. And so it is definitely a power skill. And it also helps you connect better with the amiable type personalities. They love to hear stories. They love to tell you stories, too, but that understanding personality is a whole other concept. In fact, let me tell you a story. Over the years of studying persuasion, I realized that one of the biggest obstacles for most people is self-persuasion. It could be self-persuasion, self-mastery. It could be the mindset, millionaire psychology. And the challenge there is that most people don't think they have an issue or a problem with that. The studies show that when you were growing up, you were around first or second grade, when you were told something that you were smart or dumb or ADD or weird or strange or whatever it was, good or bad, when you were told something at that age, it became an instant belief. You didn't have the ability or the cognitions to refute that. And that's very important to understand, because those are a lot of the limiting beliefs you have now. The story goes, I was flying over to Asia. I'd ran out of books to read. I'm an avid reader. And I went to the bookstore. It was actually in Hong Kong. And I saw a book. It was a skinnier book than I normally would buy, but the title kind of grabbed my attention. And I pulled it out and bought it. And it was a quick read. It was about this man. His name was Peter Daniels. And he grew up in Australia. And his father was in the military in Australia. And they tended to move quite a bit. Now, Peter Daniels had dyslexia, and back then, they really didn't know what it was, so he was labeled as dumb. And with his father moving so much, it meant that he would go to three or four different schools every year. And, of course, you know, kids would make fun of him. Teachers would label him as dumb. And so there was 2 months left of school. He didn't want to go back. Of course, his parents made him. And as luck would have it, he got one of the meanest teachers at the school. Her name was Miss Phillips. So Peter Daniels got Miss Phillips. And she put him in the back. And at one day, she was handing out this test. Now, Miss Phillips, you take the worst teacher you've ever had, multiply by 10. She was a terrible teacher. She would strike the student. She'd berate the student. She'd badmouth the students. And she didn't like Peter Daniels. And one day, she was handing back a test. And he got it. And there was a big, I mean, very, very big red F on it. And she kind of made a remark. She put it down that Peter failed again. And he kind of turned it over. He was embarrassed. And, of course, you know, at that age, it pretty much destroys you. And then And then something happened that destroyed Peter Daniels' life. Miss Phillips went to the front of the classroom and asked him to come to the front. She said, "Peter, come to the front. Come to the front now." He looked around. She says, "Now." So he sheepishly kind of walked to the front of the room and stood there. She grabbed him by the arm, turned him around, and says, "Class, this is Peter Daniels. He failed his test. You know what? He's going to be a failure his whole life. He's going to fail out of school. He's going to fail at everything that he tries. You know what? You shouldn't be his friend. You shouldn't even talk to him." And she pushed him back, and he went and sat down. Now, first things first, I think we probably all agree, is she should be shot because she just destroyed a life. Because as you follow Peter Daniels' life, he did fail out of school. He tried this business. He tried that. Failure, failure, failure. And everything he tried, he failed. He didn't know why. Why? Everyone else was making it happen, but he couldn't. Then he did some soul searching one day, and he realized that this experience, this belief, was stuck in his brain, even though he'd forgotten about it, even though he was in denial about it. And he changed that belief, and then he got into a couple businesses, got into some real estate, became very successful, and became a billionaire with the B, very successful. And then he wrote this book I was reading, and titled the book, "Miss Phillips, You Were Wrong. You Were Wrong." Now, we all have a Miss Phillips in our life. We all have different beliefs we need to adjust. And that's an important concept, is understanding our belief system and our thoughts. Okay, let me pause there. I told you that story because it's a powerful story. We all can relate with it. We put ourselves in that situation. We all have somebody in our life that doesn't believe what we are doing or doesn't support us. But by telling you that story, it has an instant connection. It grabs more emotions. That's another important part about stories, is that it triggers more emotions. It's more memorable, and you paid more attention to what I was saying. Now, with stories, you need to understand how you deliver them is very important. We'll talk about that. But I want to point out, I told that story deliberately because it is a powerful story, and we can all relate with it, and it triggers a lot of emotions. But also, I told it because it wasn't something that happened to me. Now, I added my part of it, that I was in Hong Kong and I bought the book, but a story about somebody else. Those are the most difficult to tell. The best stories to tell are stories about you, things that happen to you, because they're easier to tell. You've lived them, and it's easier to trigger the emotions. It's easier for people to feel those emotions also. Now, a lot of people say, "Well, I don't have any good stories." I'm saying, "No, yes, you do. You do. If you'd brainstorm and sit down and have a little piece of paper and just think about it over the next week, different stories about growing up or on vacation or embarrassing moments, start thinking about things you did in the summer when you were a kid, think about things in high school and different like categories in your life, when you were first married, when you were going to school, a lot of these stories will start coming back, and just write them down. You should have a little, either on the computer or a piece of paper, of different stories. And so when you're putting together a presentation or you need a good story, they're there for you. And don't think, "Oh, I'll remember that story later," because as Earl Nightingale said, and when good ideas are like slippery fish, if you don't write them down, you're going to forget about them. That's true with the stories. So first of all, brainstorm that. Get as many stories as you can. And then, of course, you can borrow stories, too. That could be a testimonial or someone that's used your product or service. Those type of stories are very important. That's why in sales or in persuasion, you have what we call a relevant story. Life insurance is famous for, "Well, I'm going to think about it, and they have a relevant story of someone who thought about it and didn't do it, and of course, 2 weeks later, there was a tragic accident and something happened. And that is more powerful than anything else to get somebody to buy life insurance or do other things. So you start collecting relevant story. If you're in network marketing, you talk to your upline, you can borrow their stories or things that happened to them or how people got on the product and how it changed their life. Relevant stories are critical. So start collecting and brainstorming this week. So those are the two things I want you to do. I really want you to brainstorm. Oh, I must have said something I said. Brainstorm the amount of stories. You can ask other people what stories work for them. And then you need to start practicing how you tell the stories. Okay? How you tell the stories is just as critical as the story. And that's what I want to focus on for the next little bit. Anybody can get good at this. Anybody has stories. Even if it's just an embarrassing moment might have nothing to do with your presentation, but it still connects you with people, and it grabs their attention. So, great story sellers have a couple things in common. As I watch people and monitor people that are very good at persuasion, is they're vivid. Their stories are very vivid. They paint the picture. When you listen to great persuaders, it's like you're listening to a movie. You're watching a movie. It's just there. You can taste it, touch it, and feel it. And that's the power of a good story. For example, let's say you get home from late one night, and you're really hungry, and nobody's home. You look around the house, there's nothing to eat. You look in the freezer, nothing there. You look in the fridge, nothing there. You look in the fridge again. The only thing in the whole fridge was a lemon. And a lemon, what's that doing there? That's the only thing, and you're hungry, and so you pull it and you kind of sniff the peel, and you say, why not? You know, you cut it in half, and that golden juice just kind of drips out onto the counter, and it's on the knife. And imagine taking that lemon as you cut it in half and taking a bite right out of the middle. Now, many of you kind of cringed a little bit. Some people even tend to salivate, and that's the power of a story, because if I would have said, okay, salivate now, okay, cringe now, you couldn't do it. Okay, you couldn't do it. But when you have a great story, it comes alive. I was teaching this group of customer service on persuasion skills and talking to people, and I had made a comment. I said, you know, when you're really good with telling stories, you can actually get people to throw up. Okay, and I kind of said it in a way where they said, she called me on. She says, no, you can't. I said, yes, you can trigger emotions. You make people sick. I mean, when you're really descriptive, she's all, no, you can't. And I said, you're daring me? She says, yes, I am. And so I knew a little bit about her background. I knew she had a thing about cats. And I knew a couple weeks before she had stepped on a present a cat had left inside her house. So everyone knows smoothies. And I knew she likes smoothies. And, you know, the fruit and the ice cream or the yogurt, whatever they put in those. And so I vividly described what we call a cat poop smoothie with the hairs getting stuck in the straw, with the texture, with the little cat litter at the bottom. And I'm going to stop there because some of you probably haven't had dinner. But I did it for about 3 minutes, and I don't know if I should be proud of this moment. She got the trash can and actually threw up. But that's the power. Not that I want you to do that, but that's how powerful stories can be. So you're painting the picture. And this is what you'll see in a courtroom. You look at successful lawyers, they paint the picture. They make the jury feel sorry for their client. They would never say, well, my client's quadriplegic. They would paint the picture. They make it vivid, make it come alive. They would say something like, can you imagine being home and laying in your bed and the sun shining through the window and you couldn't feel it? Can you imagine your daughter coming in and wanting to give you a hug and you couldn't give her a hug? Can you imagine a fly landing on your face or on your body and you couldn't swat it away? I mean, that makes it vivid. That makes it descriptive. Makes the jury feel that person's pain. So your goal is to make it very, very descriptive. How can you make it come alive? How do you paint that picture? And there's a study done in California. This was a while back, but it's relevant. When people are going door-to-door selling home insulation, and they weren't doing very well. I mean, you look at the home insulation, it's pretty much a no-brainer. It pays for itself in a year or two. But nobody was doing it. And so they studied their presentation, and they just changed one thing, and it dramatically increased sales. All they did was say something like this. They would say, well, the first time around, they would talk about the cracks in the doors and the windows and these little small tiny cracks and the little air was getting out, and that doesn't promote any fear or really understand what's going on. And so this is what they did. They said, when you take all the cracks under your doors and your windows and in your house, and you take all those cracks and put them together, it's like having a hole the size of a bowling ball in your front door. That's all it took. That painted a picture, made it come alive. It was a great example. So your goal with a great story is, number one, paint the picture. Make it come alive. You don't say, oh, I went to the beach. You So you know what? I went up, pulled over on Pacific Coast Highway, and I rolled down my window and smelled the fresh ocean air. And I took off my shoes and my socks, and I got out and locked the door, locked the car, and went out there. And I stepped on the warm sand. And I could hear the seagulls playing in the air above me, and then I could hear the surf crashing onto the shore. And that paints that picture. That's what you're looking for. So painting the picture. We also, the second thing with a great story is the rate. Now, you want to vary your rate as far as the speed. When we study great persuaders, they tend to speak faster than the average person. Now, a lot of people will talk slow so you can grasp everything they say. Some people talk so fast it really drives you nuts. You don't do, but what I'm saying here is vary your rate so it's not all the same. But your overall rate needs to be faster because it keeps their attention more. This is why. We speak about 150 words per minute. The brain can cruise along at over 400 words per minute. And so when you speak faster, it creates more energy, it creates more enthusiasm, and they don't have as much time for their mind to wander. So your rate, you need to practice. You probably should record yourself on how fast you're going to speak. So number one, make it, paint the picture, make it come alive. Remember, they're listening, they're watching a movie, they want to see it, taste it, touch it, feel it. Number two is your rate. And the third part of a great story is look at your verbal packaging, which is one of the laws of persuasion. You have to know and have to realize that every word you use will either attract or repel the person that you're talking to. Okay? And as Mark Twain said, the difference between the right word and the wrong word is the difference between lightning and a lightning bug. Words trigger emotions. And so you have to watch the words you use, not only in your stories, but during your presentation. And it's amazing, just when you study marketing, for example, changing a car for an ad about fixing cars, changing the repair to fix increases response rates. So sometimes keeping it simple goes a long way. Looking at your rate's very important, and every word you use. So record yourself. Learn to tell stories. Find relevant stories. It'll make a huge difference in what you're able to do and to grab people's attention. And that's another safety tip here. If you felt like their mind's wandering, that you've lost them, have a story ready. And if that story doesn't grab their attention, you've lost them completely, and you might as well move on. But if there's any interest at all, a story will grab their attention, and it's important to maintain, to not again make it memorable, but it grabs their attention. So, paint the picture, increase your rate, and every word you use matter. If you want more information on that, the law of verbal packaging, it goes over that step by step as far as your voice, especially if you're over the phone, it's hard to get to hear. Your voice, your inflection, your rate, and every word you use goes a long way. That's why there's no longer used cars. They're pre-owned. That's why you go to a restaurant. They no longer have, they don't put Patagonian toothfish on the menu. It is Chilean sea bass. They don't call the meat, the steak, fatty. It's marbled. And so with your stories, you might want to use some words that trigger a little fear. You might want to use some different type of words, but just want to look at every word you use. Make it come alive. Remember, stories persuade without deception. They make your presentation more cool, and it grabs their attention. Top persuaders are great storytellers. They know how to do it. They know how it works. So this week, practice this tool. Practice this tool. So record yourself. Start writing down some relevant stories. Start asking other people around you that are very good with stories they use, what stories you can borrow. If you need a good, touchy, what they call woo-woo story, you can go to the Chicken Soup for the Soul. But give people credit. Give people credit wherever you take it or how you want to do it. Stories are power. So that's your tool of the week, learning to tell stories. That being said, are there any questions about, not only about telling stories, or just any roadblocks you're running into with persuasion?
Not from my end. That was really good.
So you're going to practice your stories, Jason?
Yeah, I use you all the time as a story.
Oh, there you go. All the bad stuff, right? Anybody else out there have any questions?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Alright, you bet.
What are we going to talk about next week?
Well, that's what, do anybody want to vote on that? Or do you want me to just pick one?
Pick it.
Alright. Next week, we're going to be talking about, we're just going to build on what we talked this week. We're going to talk about tests. There are certain elements that you need to put in every presentation to resonate with every personality. We talked about stories, but when you're dealing with an analytical person, there are other things that you need to add. So I want to talk about, expand this a little further. Now, stories will always grab, if you're talking to an audience, 50% of the audience. But I want to talk about some things that will grab the other people, too. So we'll talk about that next week.
Cool.
Balancing logic and emotion. So everyone have a great week.
All right.
And we'll talk to you next week.
You bet.
All right. Good night, everyone. We'll see you.